I've become aware over time how different people experience this podcast, either coming through a syndicated client or maybe finding it every once in a while on YouTube. Hopefully they've been subscribed to the Patreon. But either way, folks who heard my last few episodes may have been worried about my recovery. But I'll let you know. Everything came out fine. I sound fine. I breathe easily, and checking with a bunch of doctors, I can even say my heart is doing better than ever. So let's talk about getting 8,500 VHS tapes. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I didn't expect I would get this deep into digitizing VHS tapes. I knew that I had some to go through. I knew that between the Mark Pines collection, the anime fan subs, and a few of my own, I had a task in front of me. But the past few months have been an adventure in understanding all of the different aspects of this entire process, the kind of machine choices I can make, the software settings, and even tracking picture modification, and whether or not it's a good idea in the first place. As of the moment that I'm recording this, I've done about 1,000 tapes, many of them anime, a bunch of them other sets that have been sent to me. And ultimately, I've put as many of them on the Internet Archive as I possibly can. None of these tapes are thrown away. They are boxed up, labeled as digitized, and sent away to the deep parts of the Internet Archive's physical archives, where I can choose to bring them back if people have different ideas about how they should have been digitized, or let them sit there, safe, for an unknown and variable-filled future. It turns out the most unexpected aspect of all of this, for me anyway, was how many of these variables exist within VHS digitization. For example, there are a variety of decks, commercial, professional, and consumer grade, each of which brings something to the table. At the end of the day, you are taking a piece of magnetic tape, which is just plastic with a magnetic coating, and dragging it across a number of magnetic heads, manufactured in some cases 10, 15, or 20 years ago, and then reliant on weirdly built circuits that are intended to take a signal off of a magnetic tape and make it look nice for whatever generation of televisions it was connected to. In the modern era, we have incredibly good ways of looking at things digitally, in ways that were never intended for the original video signal to be seen. Every single pixel can be picked out, manipulated, and modified, creating a perfect digital copy along the way. Because of that, it's very easy for me to get hung up on how variant all these different visual looks are for tapes that came from completely different sources. While I have a collection of fully professional recordings, that is, professionally dubbed and meant to be sold, I also have tapes that are clearly third or even fourth generation copies. On top of the number of copies that you're looking at, there's also whether or not this is a straight analog dub or something where it was passed over a computer running Genlock to allow subtitles to be put on it. All of this means that two tapes that look exactly the same end up being, in one case, video oatmeal and the other one breathtakingly sharp. You never know until you pop it in. It was at this point that a growing drumbeat of people let me know about a very specific eBay auction that was going on in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Somebody was selling a storage unit full of videotape. Auctions in which videotapes are sold on eBay are a very specific genre. Usually they have to mark that they're for duplication only. They never want to indicate in any way that these are recordings of commercial presentations or television on them, even though it's very clear they are. I'm assuming this is some sort of game of telephone through eBay where a crackdown or classification of tapes led to language that was passed from seller to seller, meant to avoid some sort of penalty or being taken down or maybe even having their account banned for claiming something that it was. But looking at the pictures, people had seen that this was an enormous amount of tapes going up for a very cheap price. Here's the timeline. On Thursday night, I was told about this auction. On Friday, I bid on it. On Saturday, I won it. I had gone from being completely unaware that this was even going on to becoming the sole owner of 8,500 videotapes. Now, why was I interested in this collection versus the dozens or hundreds of other auctions that happen? Well, two main factors came to light. First of all, it was a very cohesive collection. This person had been recording over the course of a quarter century, and they had kept meticulous labeling of everything that was on every tape. You could look at an individual tape, see that it was assigned a number, and have an idea of what was on that tape. And it appears that he kept thematic tapes, so he would have a number of tapes at arm's length, and if it turned out there were going to be stories about UFOs or stories about a specific country or some other political action, perhaps, he would have a tape reserved just for those. And in doing so, was quasi-curating news as it came in. On top of that, not only did he have index cards to tell you what exactly was on every tape, he had kept, in many cases, the original television guides and television schedules for the Ann Arbor area to cross-reference with these tapes. That is, it was an entire era of broadcast television documented and for its range complete. The person who was selling it was not the person who had put it together. As I understood it, the original owner had gotten very ill over the past few years and now was looking to divest his many possessions, which included these tapes, many of them 6 hours in length and stored in boxes by number, enabling somebody like myself to methodically pull out these tapes, digitize them, and immediately have a scannable index card to tell you what was on those tapes. It reminded me a lot of the David Niven collection, which was a collection of jazz recordings done by a father from his record collection for his children, where he narrated in between each of these tracks, giving you biographical information about the artists, and then putting them together in a way that people could learn about a certain artist or a certain range of jazz. This collection was digitized by Kevin Powers and is one of the most popular collections of its type on the Internet Archive. It was a series of taking care passed from generation to generation. Perhaps not surprisingly, the era of VHS tapes and home taping, which is roughly the 1970s through the 2000s. There are a number of people around the world who take on a personal mission to buy lots and lots of blank videotape, record whatever on television they think needs to be preserved, and then stores them away in ever-growing piles that, when they look back at the end of their lives, represents, in some ways, an inspiring library, and in many other ways, a boondoggle. The fact that in this era, the 21st century, there was no obvious way to take piles of tapes and give them to anyone with the expectation one might have of donating, say, rare books or paintings or even video games, tells you where this whole sort of medium ended up. Both inspiring when people interact with the tape themselves, but easily, quickly tossed to the side when anyone thinks about doing any sort of large-scale digitization. That's where I decided to step in. I bid money I didn't quite have, but which I thought I could get together, and ultimately, I won the auction. There were a couple other people interested, which doubled the price it was initially offered at, but we're still talking incredibly cheap. $700 for all 8,500 tapes, plus the stacks of television guides and the stacks of index cards. Within a few days, I was lucky enough to find a number of people who could provide space to store all of this collection before having it transported to the Internet Archive physical archives. So it was that 7 pallets of tapes found themselves in a temperature-controlled warehouse, ready to be picked up by truck. They will end up on brand new pallets, wrapped with plastic, and then stored away, ready for me to move to them when I'm done with my current inbox. It still strikes me anew how such a flimsy set of opportunities coalesced into where we are now. Somebody took a life work, a quarter century of taping, keeping track of those tapes, and storing them, putting them up for sale with not much detail about the person. And then I was notified by a number of people through social media, made a bid, happened to win, at which point it will end up in my hands, and I will do my best by it to make as much of it accessible as possible. None of that strikes me to channel thousands of hours of broadcast history into the hands of people who may benefit from it. There's an enormous amount of video being uploaded to the Internet Archive every day. The VHS vault is but one of them. It's the one that has the most hands on it. People from Europe, from America, from different approaches and interests, uploading commercials and television shows and long out-of-print tapes and uploading them every week, digitizing them using a whole manner of rigs, tape decks, and software, arguing endlessly over whether they've done jobs the right way or whether or not they've destroyed history forever. But through it, this endless stream comes in by pure luck. I'm not sure whether or not the arguments as to why television should be saved are going to hold water with somebody who didn't already walk in the room believing that. But I'll do my best. Through television, its unique medium of visual, overpowering sound and moving ever forward towards commercial breaks and structure provides us with a lens. A lens that has distortion for sure, and one which we can't believe everything coming through it. But it gives us a sense of things that have happened, citations in history for mania and celebrity, for things that fascinated the populace, and attempts to entertain us that reflect the mores, the cultural references of their contemporary time. Seeing how journalism, entertainment, and commerce all used television medium to express themselves is, I can assure you, incredibly interesting and absolutely vital to have. Television history, that is to say, the visual gathering of broadcast television, is very spotty. It tends to focus on the flagship stations, the stations for the different networks, and what was broadcasting on those places over time. But there have been affiliates, franchises, all sorts of cities and towns where they each had their own unique flavor coming through the screen. And for Ann Arbor and the Michigan area, this will be the treasure trove, the core sample of what they experienced during the 1980s, 1990s, and 2000s. As for how I'm going to take tens of thousands of hours and make it available digitally, well, don't ask me how. It's going to have to go through a whole bunch of pre-planning to make sure that as I pass over each individual tape, the maximum amount of information will be there. As to whether I'll have to raise funds for people to assist, whether or not chronicling and journals will have to be built as people watch these tapes, and whether or not we'll see some sort of machine-level augmentation for what comes out, not to mention the pure physical act of putting in thousands of tapes into machines over and over, over time. Well, I'm not quite sure how that's all going to work. I know that when some people hear that, they'll be horrified. Why not have all of your ducks in a row, all of your plans drawn out, before you agree so quickly to take all of these tapes? And all I can say is that after years of watching opportunity slip away, of watching as we go from a dire situation to one we can't do anything about in matters of hours or days, it's perhaps worth it to end up with piles and piles of tapes awaiting my hands or the hands of a future generation to do the right thing, to make history available, to find out anew and resurfaced things that have been forgotten for decades, and to approach this problem, this gargantuan mountain of tapes, not as a problem to be solved, but as a journey, a quest, a task to take on daily, weekly, monthly, until at some point we look back and realize how far we've come. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoianu, Mark Pilgrim, Peter Healy, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Matt Reynolds, Sean Kelly, John Sturm, Trixie the Cat, Dileep Reddy, Manxalot, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. When I put the money down to buy these tapes, I did something I've become much more comfortable doing, reaching out for help. I let people know online that I needed assistance because I had put this money down. More additional money was going to be needed dealing with tape decks and hardware and the whole process. And would people be willing to send funds in? And folks did. From groups that I didn't know, from people who had been following me for years, the price was covered, the transportation was covered, even one or two of the pieces of equipment that would be needed to do the job were covered. It is my responsibility to take those funds, use them as they were intended, and to provide output, results, the functional finishing of these tasks as they come in, and to share them with people as widely as possible. It wouldn't have been great for me to be as I was for so many years, where I would simply throw as much of my money as I could into this project, take an incredible bite out of my income, all for the sake of a third-party collection of material that I hadn't even planned for or thought about hours earlier. That change was slow and gradual, and the stress that used to be a part of that way of living my life is completely gone.